Tess Nissen, Sunday the 1st of April, Rabbi Ben Zion Weitz, B'chol Dor V'Dor.
B'shus, Moira Rabbi Sai. B'chol Dor V'Dor. There's been the minig, in Klal Yisroel B'chol, B'chol Mekoymos, Moshviseyem, to be makpid on various foods, the Gabba Pesach. One sees in various communities, whether it's B'nai Svad or B'nai Ashkenaz, chumras that one does not see all year round. Just to give an example, there were Mekoymus, and it still continues today, there were Mekoymus in Eastern Europe where people would only buy what was known as lebedika fish, meaning they actually had to see the fish alive swimming in the tank before they were prepared to buy it for Pesach. The reason for that chumra was that at the time there was of course no refrigerated transport, and the fishermen who were bringing the fish from the lakes and the rivers and the sea into the towns wanted the fish to remain alive as long as possible during transport. They should be fresh. So they kept them in barrels of water. And they also fed them chumets during the transportation on the backs of their wagons. However, the fish, more often than not, did not survive the journey. And they ended up floating dead in the tank of water with the chumetz. The halacha is that a bal chai, as long as it's alive, is not beleya. It's not beleya from its surroundings. It does not absorb any issa if it's in a tank where there's issa. However, once it's dead, then it just becomes an ordinary piece of fish, which of course is beleya. So there was a concern that perhaps the fish would be beleya, the chumetz that was floating with it in the tank. So they wanted to have the fish alive when they bought it. There were others that the moshel would only, and many do this still today, all fruit and vegetables that are consumed on Pesach are peeled. I remember as a bochur in yeshiva, someone told me that in his family, they had the minig that this was taken one step further, that not only were fruit and vegetables peeled, but that the same knife that was used for peeling was not used to cut through the fruit. There were two separate sets of knives, one for peeling, one for slicing. The reason for that was that logically, if you were concerned that there was something on the surface of the peel of the fruit as you peeled it, you didn't want that same knife afterwards that came into contact with whatever it was to slice through the fruit itself. And the chumras and hanhugas carry on and on and on. The point I'm getting to is that if anybody is talking himself into some form of security, thinking that nowadays with modern fruit technology, the chushes are far less and it's much easier to identify if there's anything problematic in a food, adarabba va'adarabba, the situation is much more complicated today than it ever used to be. And I'd like to give you an example, b'didi ha'v'uvda, that proves that even the most straightforward and simple natural food that is not even flavoured is also not straightforward. I was recently in California on a pre-Pesach visit to a nut facility. This particular time it was for almonds. Although I've got a horror story about walnuts as well, but we're not going to manage that today. And this facility in California, on the outskirts of Sacramento, which boasts that it's the largest almond processor in the world, if somebody hasn't seen a Californian-sized facility, they cannot imagine it, because it is nothing, you can't compare it to anything that we have in any factory in this country. I was shown around, taken around on an electric golf cart. An electric golf cart, not just on the site, but in the factory between the machines. And I was there for over 7 hours. Had I been walking, I'm sure it would have taken me several days to visit the entire site. besides the actual nut processing, this company also has, on the edge of its site, 30,000 acres of its own nut orchards. It's phenomenal. Our Chochomim, when I had finished seeing the one corner of the orchard, the hulling, the shelling, for those who are not familiar, almonds and other nuts do not grow on trees in the same way as apples, pears grow, where they're directly attached to the tree. The nut is not directly attached to the tree. The nut is in the shell that you sometimes see here, the walnut shell you're familiar with that's difficult to crack. The almond also has an outer shell, but in addition to the outer shell, it has a hull that takes it around as well, similar to the English Conker, which is encased in this thick outer hull. The almond and the walnuts also have that. And the process of removing the hulls, and then removing the shells, and then sorting and grading the nuts is quite unbelievable, because they managed to do all this with such technology that there is minimal damage to the nut itself, and there it is completely untouched by human hand. So as far as Pesach is concerned, the thought has always been, and it's always been accepted by kashrus authorities, that as long as that particular nut factory does not indulge in what is called value-added production, meaning that they're not eager to earn a bit more revenue, and instead of selling the nuts on to other companies to add the flavors themselves, they want to have a little bit of the action, and they start to, the actual nut processor starts to add to the flavoring as well, which means that you're going to have production lines not only processing raw nuts, but also adding flavorings to nuts, barbecue flavors, other spicy flavors, where there could well be not only chumetz problems, but even all year round kashrus problems. So as long as the factory doesn't do that and sticks to raw nuts, selling commercial size boxes of raw nuts for the next processor to continue from there, there should not be a problem. And indeed, after the 7 hours that I spent there, I couldn't see any problem with that particular facility. As I stood at the front door, and I was about to leave, I remembered that I hadn't talked about fumigation. Now, fumigation is not really a kashrus problem at all. It's just that for the completeness of the report, I wanted to mention the fumigation as well. What happens is that in the orchards, they do no longer pick the nuts by hand, but they have vehicles, rather like tractors, that have got hydraulic arms on them, and these tractors are driven up to the tree, and the hydraulic arms grasp hold of the tree in a sort of a bear hug, and give it a good shake, and the nuts come tumbling down in the hulls, and lie on the orchard ground until they're scooped up. Whilst they're lying on the ground, at that time of the season, the sun has already slightly cracked open the hull, and insects can easily get in. So in order to make sure there's no infestation, they collect, once they've collected all the nuts, they take them to steel lockers, rather like sea-going containers, and lock them in those lockers, and they release gas pellets to kill all the any infestation. Instead of doing that, they create these mountains of nuts out in the orchard and cover it with a thick tarpaulin, and then throw in these gas pellets to kill any insects.
What and happens to the insects?
The insects die and fall off and go into the ground, or if they're on the nut, they get washed off in the process. So the FDA had recently changed, the American Food Standard Standard Authority had recently changed the law, and you weren't allowed to use methyl bromide gas, you had to use a different gas, and I was talking to him about this, when I suddenly heard him mention the word sterilization. Now, it's for this reason that it's very important that whoever visits the factories should be perfectly familiar with the language that the personnel are speaking. Because, for instance, if you've got somebody who speaks Ivrit, even though he may have a good understanding of English, but it's easy for him to miss
an important nuance that can make all the difference. And for that moment, you may think, well, perhaps in English, fumigation and sterilization are somehow interchangeable. But I knew that they were not interchangeable. It's two different concepts altogether. And I said, excuse me, we're talking about fumigation. Why have you mentioned the word sterilization? So he says, well, I'm explaining to you that in addition to the fumigation that we're talking about, we also sterilize the nuts. I said, you sterilize the nuts? How do you sterilize the nuts? He says, we sterilize the nuts with steam. Now, anybody who's involved in kashrus, as soon as they hear the word steam, alarm bells start to go off merrily in the background. Because steam is heat, and heat can affect transfer of issa from machine to machine, from product to product. Kadassia had to stop taking sugar from Tate and Lyle, the huge facility in East London of Tate and Lyle, because Tate and Lyle had on that same site, at the other end of the site, they had a unit where they were manufacturing glucose. And the glucose was grain-based. And they had a steam system, whereby the steam system was a pipe that went round the entire site, providing the steam for the processing of both the sugar and at the other end of the site, the glucose. And the steam returned to the same boiler. And there was a very big shaula about using this for Pesach, where the sugar had been processed with steam that was shared with the process of glucose, which was based on chumetz. And for a number of years, Kadassi stopped taking from there, until Tate and Lyle, at huge expense, separated the steam system and put in an extra pipe work for the sugar production. Al Kapunim, I said to him, sterilization with steam? I haven't seen any sterilization machine. You showed me through the entire factory. You've been here most of the day. Where do you sterilize them with steam? Because let me explain. A number of years ago, there was a salmonella outbreak, and the poisoning, the bacteria, was traced back to our almond facility in California. And the Food Standards Authority became very concerned about that, and they gave a directive to the almond processors that they have 2 years in which to set themselves up in order to sterilize the almonds. And immediately, there was a very enterprising company called H2O Express that raised millions of dollars in finance and built a series, a network of sterilization sites dotted around California, with each site being close to a cluster of nut facilities so that the nut producers should be able to use their sterilization sites. And we send our nuts to the sterilization sites. So I said, when do you send them? When do you send them to the sterilization site? They're in the boxes. I've seen them go onto the trailers, onto the great trucks that are taking them to the ports and to the distribution. He says, on the way to the distributors, to the port, they drive to these sterilization sites and the nuts are sterilized. So I said, I have to see one of these sites. He says, not a problem. I'll call the site that we sent to and tell them you're coming. It's very easy to find it. Go out the gates, turn right, and it's straight down the road. He was right. It was stuck in one right turn straight down the road, except in California, straight down the road was 167 miles straight down the road. I got there literally seconds before they closed, and they very kindly stayed open to show me this absolutely unbelievable three huge chambers that you could park aircraft in, and each chamber could be totally hermetically sealed, and the nuts were sterilized by being taken by pallet trucks, in the pallets, in the boxes, in the cartons, stacked up into this plant, and the steam was so intense that they sterilized the nuts in the packaging. That was a chokhmah. Now, the twist is that, as you can well imagine, the energy costs of operating this, I think it was either 12 or 18 hours, I don't remember now, I have to look at the report, I think it was 12 hours. 12 hours at this level of steam, the costs are enormous. and they're not going to take just one consignment, one shipment, loaded in one tiny corner of this huge shed, they've got three of them, and switch on the system just for one consignment that comes off a trailer. But they wait until they get an accumulation of various consignments. And these various consignments come from different types of manufacturers in the nut industry. And you can have a kosher Pesach pallet of nuts waiting to go to those who sell the Pesach nuts in the shop, standing in one corner, and cheek by jowl next to it, a pallet full of a chumash sticker product containing nuts, grain-based, standing right next to it. No hechsher in the world would want their kosher Pesach nuts being steamed together with a chumash sticker product. The frightening part of the story is that you could have a rov that's sent to visit the factory. He would see the nuts on the trees being taken off, being shelled and hulled and sorted and packed into boxes and put onto trailers with a kosher Pesach stempel on them, and he would go home saying to himself, this is the mahadrim and our mahadrim, this is better than if you'd have to pick it yourself from your tree in the back garden where you touch the nuts with your hands. This was untouched by human hands. This is, for anybody, a top kashrus product, without realizing that 167 miles down the road, on the way to the port, this product is going to end up with a serious kashrus problem for Pesach. It did not get any easier, Rabbosai, not at all. Stilled mineral water. Poshita mineral water, uncarbonated. Carbonated, everybody knows that there can be a problem, that nowadays the gas can be removed during a chumash sticker process when there's high temperatures and they're making a chumash sticker liquid. It is shayach and they do it. They remove the gas, it's a byproduct, and they sell the gas for to be used in order to carbonate drinks. Some hashayim are not makbid on this for Pesach, some are. So, carbonated, you have to look at the gas, right? Still water, the line of thinking always used to be, as long as the spring that's providing the water has got a bottling plant on site, meaning they do not need to take a tanker and fill it with the spring water and then send it to a general bottling plant that bottles all different types of drinks, where there could be a problem of a chumash sticker drink that's also being bottled on the same bottling line. As long as it hasn't got that problem, but the company that's got the spring has built a bottling plant specifically for this spring only, then in still water you shouldn't have a problem. So we recently sent one of the Gdassi Rabbonim to inspect a still water, well-known spring in southern England, and there was no carbonated water, and he should have been back within 20 minutes. He wasn't back within 20 minutes. The reason that he wasn't back within 20 minutes was because as he looked at the production lines, the bottling lines, he noticed a tank standing in the corner. Big, huge tank. And he said, excuse me, what's this tank? So he says, well, you may have heard that mineral water has taken off unbelievably. And we cannot pump water from the spring, enough water to satisfy our turnover, merely by pumping it from the spring directly into the bottling lines. Sorry? The demand that we have. So we need to additionally pump water from the spring into this huge tank, and this tank then feeds additional bottling lines as well. So we've got water coming from the spring, and we've got water from the spring that's being held in the tank that is then feeding other bottling lines. So did you buy this tank new? No. We bought a second hand. Ah. What was it previously used for? It was previously used in the beer industry. But we washed it out. On both sides, those of you, and I'm sure all of you, who spend the entire night cashiering the kitchen to magnificent standards would not want to have a bottle of water sitting Pesach on the table that has been held for several days in a tank that was used in the beer industry, even if it was Guinness. So the next time that you're sitting at the Shulchan Aruch and you've got this wise guy next to you who announces at the top of his voice that mineral water, still mineral water, does not need to have a hechsher for Pesach, and anyway, it's all money and politics, and he knows a lot about kashrus and food because his next door neighbor's got shares in Ozem, then you should set him right and not let him get away with it. Everything needs a hechsher for Pesach. Probably without exception. During the Seder, at the end of, after we finish Berachas HaMazon, we say, Shvoi Chamoscho al Hagoyim, Asher lo yiduruchu, v'amamluchos asher b'shimcho lo yikiruil. What is the relevance of these Pesukim at this slot in the Seder? And I've looked this up in many Agudas, and to be honest, I didn't find an explanation of what Shvoi Chamoscho is doing there immediately after benching, before the next piece of halal. I couldn't find an explanation that I could really say took my breath away. However, I came across a vault, an astonishing Muradik vault, from the Be'er Yosef, who is Rabbi Yosef Salam from Yerushalayim. And he says a Muradik vault, and I believe that his vault tackles this question as well. He asks that it's well known the minhag Yisrael to open the door after benching, before Lailonu, before Shvoi Chamoscho. And the Ramor says that the reason for that is because it's to demonstrate Lein Shimurim. So he says, logically, if that is the only reason to show that tonight is Lein Shimurim and we open the doors, we should be doing that at the start of the Seder. Possibly, when we say Holach Moanio, we should open the doors, Kol Dichman Yesev V'Yechel, and then we're showing that it's Lein Shimurim. Why are we waiting until the very end? So he explains this with two short Gemuras in Sefer Pesukim, Daf Pei Dalet, Daf Pei Gimel and Daf Pei Dalet. The Gemurah there has got an Aboya, where the Gagin V'Aliyos Niskatshu. The Gemurah's Aboya is that when they were Mekadosh, the Mukam Hamigdash, the Azorus, and Yerushalayim should have the Kedusha that we should be able to eat Kabbalas there, the Gemurah's Kasha or Yaboya is, were they only Mekadosh the ground floor, or were they also Mekadosh the Avia, the airspace above the ground, to include balconies and first floors and rooftops? The difference being that if they were only Mekadosh the ground floor, you'd have to have your feet on the ground floor when you eat the korban. Either be standing in the Azora or in Yerushalayim on the ground floor if you're eating Kodeshim Kalim that could be eaten in the entire town of Yerushalayim. But if they also were Mekadosh the upper stories, then you could be sitting on a balcony overlooking the Azora, or you could be sitting on a rooftop terrace eating the korban in Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, there's a memra, Kizaisa Pischa Vahalila Puka Igra. The Kizais of Pesach and the Halal cracked the roofs. So Rashi explains that since the Halacha was, you could not leave the Korban Pesach over uneaten until the following day, so Memele wasn't shaykh for one person to eat up a Korban Pesach on his own. He had to bring in a group to help him finish the Pesach. And everybody would get a kezias. Those groups would sit on the roof and would eat the Korban Pesach, and they would say halal. And that halal after they finish the Korban Pesach of hundreds or thousands, and some say millions of Oile Regel, that came together at the same time and said halal on the roofs of Yerushalayim, it was nidma, it appeared as if the roofs would crack from the vibrations. The Gemara says, the haraya, that they had the Korban Pesach on the roof. They had the Korban Pesach on the roof, must be they were mekadesh the roofs as well, the airspace as well. The Gemara says, no, it's a misunderstanding. They had the Korban Pesach on the ground floor, and then they went up to the roof to say halal. Because, in fact, only the ground itself had the kedusha to be able to eat kabunas there. There's a previous Gemara, the Gemara says that if you take out a kabun outside its area, every kabun's got an area, Tochikalem and Yerushalayim, Tochikadoshim and Azura. You take it out of that, you're over Issa Yotze. You remove the kabun from where it's allowed to be, the kabun becomes pusul because of Yotze. You've taken it out from its boundaries. So the Gemara asks, where Chazal goes a tumah to teach that person who took out the korban that he becomes tumah as well. Not only does his korban become pusul, but he becomes tumah to teach him a lesson not to do it again. So the Gemara says, korban pesach, they definitely were not goyzer. They didn't need to be goyzer on korban pesach, because there was never a concern they'd take it out from the boundary, because b'nei chabura's reason hen. The b'nei chabura they got together were meticulous about the hilchas pesach, and they were very careful to make sure that no one took the korban out from where it was allowed to be eaten. In the case of korban pesach, was lo yisoytzi min habayis min habusa hachutza. You couldn't take it out of the house itself. Says Rabbi Yosef Salant, lefizeh, it's very mistaber that when the group got together in the Kenshika Yerushalayim Ahayskalach to eat the Seder and the Korban Pesach, they would bolt the front door to make sure that no one went out, because there was an issa to go out and to take the Korban outside. When they finished benching, and the B'nai Chabura knew that everybody must have eaten the Korban Pesach because they benched, then they opened the doors, and they went out onto the roof, and they said halal together with their soyrus, that it appeared that it was going to crack the roofs. So Rabbi Yosef Salam says that it's takalei shimurim, but the reason for that slot, where it's slotted in, dafke after buchas and birkas are muslim to open the door, is b'chol doya v'doya. Yidin used to open the doors because b'zman abayis they used to open the doors, and the minig remained to open the doors to go as they did Bizman Abayis, when they opened the doors to release everybody from the hot houses and to go outside to say hello in the cool Yerushalayim and night air. The Fizeh, one can say that the reason why the Balagoda put in those words Shvoicha Moschel is because now we're opening the doors as we used to do Bizman Abayis, but we don't go out anymore after Korban Pesach to say hello on the roof, because but so there's no longer the opportunity to finish the Korban Pesach and go out on the roof. And we are mispalul the noichal sham and asvuchim and apsuchim. The viyas goy of tzedek umheri meni umay. Sorry, I've got a bucket of throat.